This is Jillian Morning. Jillian is an East Lincoln High School graduate 6 years ago. 6 years ago? 7 years ago? 2006, 2007. She used to actually attend Grace on her own, which is kind of cool, back in high school. Jillian has just a horrific story, and she's an amazing woman. She's 25, model actress, and just full-time in the nonprofit. She has a nonprofit. I'll let you talk about that a little bit. But what I want you to take a peek at is this young lady right here has teeth. She dresses well. She's professional. Straight-A student. Have a beer, too. 4.0 in college. All right. This is no slouch, back corner, street corner prostitute on a crack habit. Right? So what I wanted to do is bring the best example I could to the suburban myth that we're all safe. All right? Roll on with it. You got as long as you want.
My heart still pounds every time I tell this story. It's funny just to even start back to this morning and the past several weeks at the church I go to now. I go to Forest Hill in Charlotte. We've been talking about the book of Habakkuk and all of the things that people just say, why God? Why does this happen? Why does that happen? And having trouble kind of rejoicing in those hard times. And I myself, 6 years ago, had trouble finding an extreme hardness in rejoicing in really hard times in my life. And now when I look back, as crappy as they were, I am very thankful for them. And I'm able to see the good that God meant during this evil, satanic period in my life. And it's just funny how there's always things with God and there's always verses that you hear and they really just apply to your life. And just this morning sitting there and talking, you know, everybody has a story, everybody has a hard point in their life, but really being able to use that to closer your faith with him, and without a test, you have no testimony. So going back, when I was 19, I was in college at UNC Charlotte making a 4.0, you know, involved in a lot of clubs, but I started modeling when I was 12. And really when I graduated high school, I started to get more into it. My mom was a drug addict and alcoholic most of my life. I was not very supportive of any of these activities. So when I graduated college, I started to get more offers. I had people that wanted to be an agent here, there, and everywhere. And I didn't really know how I was supposed to get into it. Well, one day, a model, I can now say she was probably the recruiter, messaged me and said, I have a guy who would love to meet you and help you with your modeling career, not just building your portfolio, but getting you jobs all over the country. So I met him for coffee, and he was dressed in a nice suit and tie and owned this multi-million dollar financial hedge fund, was connected to all these people. You know, I got to see the models that he represented. Their photos looked like they were straight out of Vogue. And, you know, at 19 years old, not really having a whole lot of parental guidance, I was like, wow, like this person can really help me capture my dreams. Well, that modeling to me is what so many other situations are to everybody else, is vulnerability. There's nothing in the world that someone isn't vulnerable to. Everybody in this room has something that they're vulnerable to, whether it's getting a better job, better relationship, more money, you know, just success. There's something that everybody wants and desires that you really are like, I'll do anything to make this happen. Even finding a job now with, you know, the unemployment rate being higher. And with that, I was like, okay, you know, what do I need to do? So I worked with him from February of 2007 until May of 2007. On breaks during college, sometimes on the weekend, flying to other cities. I landed 3 different magazine campaigns. I was on the cover of some packaging for Gildan, so the t-shirt, socks, and underwear company. And I was starting to get all these jobs, and I was like, wow, I am 19 years old, getting good grades, you know, living a normal life, but also making my dreams happen. And never in a million years did I think, oh, this person is just trying to groom me or build my trust or is going to take advantage of me. I'd actually told my dad that I saw him like a father figure to me. And he was always asking about school and always asking about my grades and how my life was. And really throughout that period, I was developing a trust for him, but also seeing him in this light, because he was my father's age, of someone who had my best interest at heart. Well, I finished my exams, and in May of 2007, flew to Scottsdale, Arizona to shoot for, some men in here might be familiar with, CAO Cigars. So there was a cigar campaign that they were running, and they had picked two girls to come out and do the shoot, and then they were going to pick one of the ads as the final one. So I flew out to Scottsdale, Arizona, never been to the city, put up in a 5-star hotel, super excited. Also, 5-star hotel, that kind of gives you a sense of safety if you're at this really nice environment. And people think of trafficking when it does happen here in the States of being like a Motel 6 or, you know, a Ramada Inn or something that you enter from the outside, not something with this grandiose lobby. And people are spending $400 and $500 a night on a room. So my manager met me out there. We had lunch that day. We had dinner that evening, talked about the shoot the next day, make sure I got a lot of sleep. And I went to bed that night thinking I would wake up in the morning and go shoot and then fly home a couple days later. Well, in the middle of that night, I heard like a rustle at the door, like when you enter your key card. And I'm a very, not anymore, but I was a very deep sleeper at the time, but still woke up kind of foggy and hesitant. And I saw my manager and two other men come into my room. Well, my first thought, because I trusted this person so much, was, am I late? Did I miss something? Like, why are you in here? But thinking that it was something that I had done that I wasn't aware of. So after about 2 minutes of silence and him staring at me and setting up a video camera on a tripod, and I'm just kind of sitting there looking around waiting for somebody to tell me what's going to happen, I quickly realized what was going to happen. And my manager and two other men that I had never seen before in my entire life, about his age, that were dressed in business suits, I later learned they were his financial clients. They all three raped me, they videotaped it, and they photographed it, and said, and you will still continue to work your job here in a few hours. So the next day, alongside of my manager, I shot for CAO Cigars and had to pretend as they all shook his hand like he was this great businessman who was an upstanding citizen and a Christian and a father of two and all of that. I had to act like this was the person he was when I knew so well from the night before that he wasn't. I had decided, well, who am I going to tell? I don't want to tell anybody because someone's going to say, well, it's your fault. You shouldn't have gone out there. What did you do wrong? And I didn't have a mother who I would share that information with. And I came home. You know, my roommate asked me how my trip was. I was very short and said, oh, it was good. I, you know, hope I get the ad. And that was kind of the end of my story. And I had decided, just a lot of like the trauma that had happened throughout my childhood, that I was just going to compartmentalize, put in the back part of my brain, and move on. In high school, I was that overachiever that was president of everything and involved in every club and, you know, graduated third in my class because I didn't want anyone to see any of the trauma that was going on at home. So I decided, well, with this situation, I'll just do the same thing. I'll be good at school. I'll not make any mistakes. I'll be really successful. I've never been in trouble. I've never tried a drug. I didn't drink until later in college. So, you know, I felt like I had done all these things right and people would just see that. Well, 2 weeks later, he called me and said he was in Charlotte. My heart sunk and he said, I need you to come meet me. Of course, why in the world would I come meet you? Well, quickly he said, I have all of the videos and the photographs from Scottsdale. I think you might want to see them. No, I don't want to see them. Like, I really would like you to be out of my life. And he said, no, I'm not requesting, I'm demanding. I need you to come meet me actually up here at the Hampton Inn right at exit 28 right next to the Cashins, and said, if you don't come meet me, I'll show up at your apartment. I know you have a roommate. I know where your family lives. And he said it would be in your best interest to meet me. Well, in keeping the secret from getting out to my roommate or anybody else that I knew, I said, fine, I'll come meet you. I got up there and I said, what do you want? What is this all about? And he said, well, if you don't continue to do this on a regular basis with any of my financial clients or celebrity clients that you would choose, then I'm going to sell these videos to pornographic websites, to rape websites. Rape websites, they do exist all over the entire world, usually run on foreign IP addresses, where there are millions of videos that men can purchase, and obviously do purchase because they stay in business, of women getting raped. And at 19 years old, I said, I don't really want someone to Google my name and see any of these videos appear. Will I get a job? What will people think of me? And it was a really, really tough decision. I didn't want my family to find out, and I didn't want him to ever show up at my doorstep, so I was like, fine, I'll be compliant with whatever you ask. Just don't hurt me. And so for almost 6 months, until October of that year, about once a month, he would call me and say, I need you to come to this city, or I have a client coming to this city to meet you. And these weren't like clients like you see on Dateline NBC. These were men with children wearing wedding rings who, you know, made a lot of money in high financial positions that for some reason thought that a 19-year-old was choosing to sleep with him and was there by choice. From physical scars to physically being beaten up to having every single instance videotaped and photographed to keep me in that submissive state. Finally, in October, he was under investigation from the FBI for not trafficking, but financial crimes. And that was where my freedom came, because he ended up being sentenced to prison for 15 years for running this large Ponzi scheme. So at that point, I was like, wow, I have my freedom. Well, you know, we live in a free country, but when you have somebody that has the ability to hurt you, knows everything about you, knows where you live, is in a very powerful position, you are essentially enslaved. And I finished college, graduated with a 4.0, two majors, a minor, like lived abroad. But I did my senior thesis on human trafficking and sex slavery. So my minor in college was Holocaust, genocide, and human rights. And I lived in Germany for a while. I saw it all over Eastern Europe when I traveled. And never once did I think that was me. So I completed almost a 60-page thesis on this issue, but it was all based in Europe and in Asia and in Latin America and everywhere else where it happens. And to me, I just got stuck in a really crappy situation that I didn't know how to get out of. Well, almost a few months after, so actually to the day, it was 2 years ago this May, but I was doing research on the internet because I didn't know originally how long he'd been sentenced to prison, and I felt like if I saw that he was sentenced for a really long time, as bad as that is, I would get joy out of his pain being in there. And I was reading an article online, and it below said, I hope it comes out about the sexual predator, molester, and trafficker that he is. So that was my aha moment, like, oh my gosh, wait a minute, that's me. I've studied this, I've seen it, and I've lived it and never really realized it. Well, that was a really hard word to read, because A, I felt stupid that I had never made the association, but B, all of this time that I had been putting these memories to rest, they all just came flashing back. And it was, I was living it, I was seeing it, I was hearing it, I was smelling it, I was having flashbacks, I didn't want to sleep, I didn't really want to do anything. Well, I continued to read down the thread, and there were probably about 10 different girls anonymously with internet IDs saying that the same thing had happened to them and that he had profited over $13 million off of selling models. One guy, $13 million. There are traffickers and pimps in Charlotte making over $1 million a year tax-free by selling women. But to know that I was one of about 20 girls, that was really tough. But to also know that I almost made this man $1 million while being beaten and living in this hell, literally, that I was going through was just sickening. And it came to the point that I broke down. I finally told somebody, and that 71% of suicidal tendencies right here, when you feel like everybody in the world at Walmart, oh, what if I go to the grocery store? All these men that seem upstanding and nice, what if they've purchased this video? What if they've seen it? You feel so exposed and so open to anything and everybody. I didn't want to sleep. I didn't want to eat. Like, I just felt hopeless. And I did not see God in my life. I had spent years being angry with him for what had happened because I felt like I had done nothing wrong and I didn't deserve it. And it was just the lowest of the low, like your head hits the pavement. And I said, you know what? Like, if I'm never able to live a normal life, I'm never going to have somebody that will love me. I will never be able to get married and have someone accept me and not think that I'm damaged, because I felt damaged. And after attempting suicide and then realizing I had made a mistake, I spent 5 days in a psych ward. Another problem aside of the 100 beds is that they throw you in a psych ward that's co-ed. I was across the hall from a man who had had 2 counts of sexual assault that had been released from prison to have his meds reevaluated. So for 5 days, open doors, I'm across the hall from this man who's very intimidating to me. Much less, though, I was transported there in handcuffs, like I was the criminal. And that's what happens in the United States, is that we criminalize the victims and we glorify the pimps, we glorify the traffickers in all these types of ways. Then I even had a nurse say, because she was interested in my life, and when she found out that I was on Gildan's underwear packaging, their underwear packaging is not Victoria's Secret. They're pretty much granny panties, but somebody has to do it. She said, if you hadn't done that, then maybe this wouldn't have happened to you. And that was really tough because I felt like I was trying to get help in those 5 days, and I was trying to come out of this dark place, and to have somebody say that I essentially deserved it was really tough. Nevertheless, I got out. I went to regular counseling, which was not very helpful, and I moved to South Park, and I said, you know what? I'm tired of being angry. I'm going to give God a second chance. And not that he ever should have lost the first chance, but in my heart, that's how I felt. So I started going to church again, sitting by myself, hoping that nobody would notice me, and went to church for a few months, ended up developing friends that saw me as who I was and not that I was a rape victim or a trafficking victim. It wasn't my identity, but my identity was in Christ. And that kind of furthered as I continued to go to church there, and I was like, I really need to do something that combines everything I went through, but I had no idea. I spoke at the Mayor's International Cabinet Awards and had a woman from India come up to me afterwards and tell me what a good job I did and what I wanted to do with my life. And we got on the subject of trafficking. Well, considering she had grown up in India, she's seen it day in and day out. She's seen mothers walk up to, you know, the Dalit area is bad, but and sell their children at 3, 4, 5 years old just to get rid of them. And knowing that they're going into sex slavery. And she said, I'll be really disappointed in you if you don't do something about it. Well, I've never liked anybody to be disappointed in me. A month later, I was sitting in church, and our local campus pastor was speaking about love and everybody's desire to be loved and that we also want to give love. Well, I had been thinking for a month what a name would be of my nonprofit, because that's legally where you have to start. And it came to me, I'm a big Beatles fan, so All You Need Is Love is one of my favorite songs, but I immediately was like, well, I'll get sued for copyright. So I thought of All We Want Is Love, and I was like, that's so true, because as anybody in society, you want to be loved, but especially when you go through trauma, all you want is love and acceptance. So then I thought, to take it a step further, what could the LOVE acronym be? And I decided that that would be Liberation of Victims Everywhere. And it doesn't have to be trafficking. It could be rape. It could be domestic violence. People are victimized by so many things. And within 2 weeks, I had had somebody volunteer to do legal services for free. I had all this stuff happen. And almost a year ago, this July, it'll be a year ago, I started my nonprofit. Well, I didn't know where to begin. You know, obviously I'm only 25, so a year ago I was 24, and that's a big task, but I knew that I had a powerful story, and the people who did know it were really impacted by it. So it continued. I spoke at some Christian conferences, and then I offered to help our pastor. You know, pastors typically think of knowing about all these injustices. David Chadwick was preparing a thing on human trafficking for our justice series. I sent him an email, just said, hey, if you need any help preparing with stats, facts, I did a whole thesis on it. Never mentioned anything about it happening to me. And when I was in there, I was talking to him and I started telling him part of my story and how it's local and all this stuff. And he said, wait a minute. I had no idea. And because I felt so exposed, I assumed that he knew. I've been going to Forest Hill for a year and a half. And so I did it. He asked me to do a video testimonial, and I did it. But at the end of us meeting, he said, there's one thing. I went through a really traumatic period in my life, and that they may have violated your body, but they never touched your soul. And ever since he told me that, that has stuck with me. And I made leaps and bounds that day in my healing process of thinking about, I really am the same person that I was before. I was just broken for a little bit of time, but my soul is completely whole and intact through Christ. And that was very, very powerful to continue on. Well, since then, my organization has grown, and we are now focusing on the education piece, just like what we're doing now. But people say awareness and education are great, but not if you don't do something with it. So schools are a big thing for us. We started a program called Student Traffic. So we've got 3 states that have different chapters in them, just like you would have a HOSA or a debate club in a high school or college. We've developed these clubs that students can start and actually raise awareness, do community action. We provide them with things to do, documentary screenings, outreach programs in their respective cities. Taking it a step further, business people need to be trained. So this really is anywhere and everywhere. I called in a tip 3 miles from my house the other day, and I live in South Park, not a crappy area, and 15 underage girls are being held in a 2-bedroom apartment, a place that I had passed almost every day driving. And people think it doesn't happen here. So, well, who visits these places to do something about it? You've got cable companies, you've got electricians, you've got plumbers, you've got power companies that are going in people's homes, and if they're properly equipped with what they can do about it and what to look for, they can call and report a tip. Because if you see something on the street, you don't necessarily know where it is, but if a cable man is in someone's home or an electrician and they see, oh, well, there are 6 mattresses in here and not 1 piece of furniture. Oh, I see 15 girls in here. Oh, I see in the amount of time I've been here, 6 men have come and gone. There are so many signs that people just automatically think, no, that's probably not that. It's probably not this. It's probably not bad. But if they actually get education and training on it, they can actually help get these girls rescued. But also for prevention. Most of you probably have children, and to protect your children from this happening to them, the average age being not the newest thing I've heard is 12 to 14. So that's 8th grade, 9th grade, and high school. If these girls aren't learning about, and boys, what could happen to them, how are they supposed to protect themselves? When a man comes up and tells them that they're beautiful at 13 years old at a mall and woos them, they kind of don't know how to react to that. Every girl wants affirmation to be told she's beautiful. And then at a young age to teach men not to continue on with the demand. So over 70% of pornography ties to trafficking. Now I'll make this more personal. I later did find out that all of the videos had been sold to rape websites, some to regular pornographic websites. I've had over 16 videos that a friend of mine who's a lawyer has had that have been found and removed off of these websites. Some of them very graphic, but some of them I got to actually see how many times somebody had bought this. That's disgusting and sickening. But at the same time, plenty of men who watch these videos, my aunt and her husband are currently going through a divorce because he has an addiction to pornography. And she said, how would you feel if you were on one of these websites and you saw your niece on there knowing what she went through? But people don't think about it like that. They think, this girl is making money. She clearly signed up for this. This is where she wants to be. Same with strip clubs. Over 30% of women in strip clubs are actually being forced to stay there. Whether their boss is threatening them with their lives, whether he's threatening their children, whether they've got an abusive spouse at home saying, if you don't make $1,000 tonight, then I'm going to beat the tar out of you when you get home. But men don't think about that. When they're in there and they're looking at this female that they're desiring, they think, well, clearly she put herself in this position and she has no desire to leave, because if she wanted to leave, she could. The same with the pornography. They don't see what's off camera. They don't see these videos that are spliced. Well, if we're teaching young boys all of these stats and statistics, then they can grow up to be men who don't partake in it. It's easier to train a puppy than it is an adult dog. So somebody who's been watching pornography for 10 years, it's a lot harder to break that habit. So education to youth is critical. A big revelation, Duke Power has contacted me in the past couple weeks, and they want all of their employees trained. So starting in July, every month, I've got one Friday that I'm going to spend with them training their employees. That's huge, though. So if you get other corporations and places alike that are going to come in contact with these victims and teach them how to do something about it, it truly is amazing. But the demand, simple economics for anybody in here that's ever studied a piece of it, if there's no demand, there's no supply. Why do you need such a big supply? Because there's such a demand that's continuing to grow. We live in a society that glorifies just sex that's outside of marriage, but sex that is hidden and forbidden. And if something bad were to happen, or, you know, maybe I can't do this with my wife, but if I leave her and do something else, there's a correlation with adultery. Over 70% of men who commit adultery are known to buy trafficked girls. Not trafficked women, trafficked girls. Because at maybe 30, they desire the love of an 18-year-old or a 17-year-old. Maybe by chance they can get it. Well, they grow up and they're 50 and they can't get that anymore. So they're forced to go out and purchase it because in their mind, psychologically, they still want that love and affection from somebody the same age. So just in bringing it home, if you work for a company that you think might come in contact with these people, demand change. There are hotels out there that sponsor trafficking organizations. Hilton is a big one. You know, make sure you buy things that are fair trade. Make sure you stay at places that support things like this. Right before the PGA tournament that was here, Wells Fargo, a couple weeks ago, we packaged 12,000 bars of soap. It's a lot of freaking soap. And we put the trafficking hotline number on the back of it. Took a couple hours. We had like 60 volunteers that showed up. We put 250 in a bag. with a packet that told the signs of trafficking in English and in Spanish. They were laminated. People tend to not throw away things that are laminated. And we also gave them all of the girls who've been reported missing in the last 6 months in Charlotte in this packet so they could look at it and then put these soaps out in their rooms and in their common areas during the PGA tournament. Why? Because, like Bo said, when men flock to a city, there's an increase in sex trafficking. Before the Democratic National Convention was here, 6 girls were rescued in Charlotte. Not one of them lived in Charlotte. They were brought here to meet the demand of the DNC. Well, we have CIAA every year. We have Wells Fargo every year. We just had a bid for the Olympics. So as our city continues to grow and get more national attention, so do the amount of sex trafficking victims. Something that's really scary, though, when he was talking about runaways, 1 in every 3 runaways is said to actually end up getting caught in the sex trade. Well, according to the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children, 1 in 10 runaways between 10 and 19 1 in 10 children between 10 and 19 will attempt to run away and succeed. Well, if you do the numbers of the census that are here in Charlotte, which I've done recently for a business plan, there are 4,623 children that are at risk based off of those statistics of actually getting caught in the sex trade every year. That's a lot of kids. I mean, do you think of a church like this or the church I go to? We have 5,000 members. That's almost our entire group that goes to my church. All of kids, not even including the adults. So it's a problem that is here. It's there. It's really everywhere. It's not just in third world countries. And it's not, she wants to be there. She signed up for this. She chose it. And she wants this lifestyle. It's who's controlling her, threatening her with her life, making her feel like she has to be there, or who's destroyed her self-worth. If you poll a room of 12-year-old girls and say, how many of you would like to be doctors when you grow up? How many of you would like to be lawyers? How many of you would like to be singers, dancers, actresses, models, any of that? You're going to get all these hands that are raised everywhere. Ask that same group of girls, how many of you want to be a porn star when you grow up? How many of you want to be a stripper? Do you think any hands will raise? No. But something happens in those years where they're broken, their self-esteem is destroyed, they're lied to. It's a desperation or survival. I mean, there are girls who are 15 and 16 providing for their entire families in some of the impoverished areas of Charlotte. There's something happened that breaks that girl down and makes her feel like that's where she has to be. It's not, I dream of doing this when I get older. So when you're looking at things online, if there are any men in here looking at pornography, I hope that you know that it could be your daughter. It could be, it's somebody else's daughter. It could be me that ends up showing up. And all I ask is that you think twice when you go about the sexual demand that really exists in our society.